Blog Talk.
Real sports guys, that's be real. When real guys talk real sports, we will. Great market game changer. That's be real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Third guys, you just gotta recognize I gotta pay the money, I gotta keep it. Everybody has an opinion. They came with so much bravado and so much swagger. We're not gonna make it. Sometimes you gotta create space where there's no space. I can't argue with LeBron with this. I do have a bit of a problem with execution. Right? He burned a lot of bridges. He's gonna be hated in Chicago. He's gonna be hated in Cleveland. He's gonna be hated in New York, and that's what I'm excited to see.
Now I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's gonna be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play it. All right, welcome to the Real Sports Guys, where real guys talk real sports. You're on with Marcus the Game Changer. Got my man D. Wills. Holla at the people.
What's up, people? Welcome. Happy New Year. We're off to another live 2011. We got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot 2011. We got a lot to talk about. Happy New Year. Hope you all had a great holiday. You enjoyed yourselves. Hope you didn't eat too much, you know. Stick to those resolutions. You know, our resolution here is to keep bringing you hot shows. That's our plan. That's our mission. That's what we plan on doing. We plan on execute the game plan to the fullest. So we got a jam-packed show. It's going to be football heavy. We got a lot going on in college football. We got a lot going on in pro football. We're going to talk a little bit of basketball as we always do. We love to talk to NBA. But it's going to be a lot of football in this show. So for all our football fans, all of our listeners out there who enjoy football, feel free to give us a call and get on with the Real Sports Guys at 1-347-989-0844. The number is 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to get on. Just don't come weak. You know how we do, okay? You know how it goes down here. We don't play that. If you come weak, you may not be able to come back. It's just like that. You know, we hate to do that to you. So don't force us to have to do that, because that's a drastic measure. We will take drastic measures if we need to.
Yeah, you will get Mutombo. You will get Mutombo over here. We will be waving at this.
Yeah, don't make us break out the finger wave. We got Big Deke. You know, he's laying in the cut, ready to wave you off if you get out of line when you come weak. So wow, D, it's going down across the college football landscape. Things are changing. I mean, there's been so much since the last time we got on with everybody and we had an opportunity to talk with the listeners out there. The bowl season kicked off, got in a full swing over the second half of the holiday season there and going into New Year's. And then past New Year's Day, a lot of things have changed. The landscape is totally different. The Big Ten took a huge L. Looks like they may come up with a win tonight. Ohio State looked like they were doing pretty good against Arkansas. It looks like they may come away with a win tonight to kind of help things not look so bad. But, man, they got it handed to them. You know, the Big Ten is not looking good. The Pac-10 looked real good. Stanford in particular. Stanford's got a real interesting situation out there. You know, that's a program that Harbaugh built up from the ground. And, you know, they put it on Virginia Tech, a team that went undefeated in the ACC. That's the first undefeated ACC champion I think since Florida State in the mid '90s. So that was supposed to be a pretty high quality ACC team that Stanford just went out there and walked on. You know, Harbaugh may be leaving, Luck may be leaving. I think that's the first place we want to go real quick to start the show out. You know, it's kind of a tale of two cities right now. You got Harbaugh's situation in Palo Alto, you know, out of Stanford, and then you got situation in Ann Arbor. You know, you are inside Ann Arbor Connect. What's going on in the A-squared?
I was on the phone on the highway today trying to figure out what's going on. And we may get one of my guys who might join us tonight. I know he's making some phone calls. Yeah, I think if you looked at the last hiring process for Michigan and you look at this hiring process, what it does say is that there's a lack of leadership and direction and savviness for a program of that magnitude. You know, if you look at what happened when Carr retired, first of all, Carr had something against Les Miles, and he announced his retirement before the national championship game, before his bowl game, to force Les Miles to have to defend the questions. And actually, you know, Les Miles was in a good situation at LSU, but he wanted the option to look at Michigan. And by Carr doing it early, that kind of pushed him off. And Rodriguez ended up being really a third or fourth choice for Michigan. And then you see the same kind of blundering right now happening with them right now. You know, Rodriguez is fired. No, he's not fired. And so it said a lot about the lack of leadership and ability for folks to close on the big deal. And the question is, you know, is Michigan at a point where it doesn't understand that it's not where it used to be? And also what happened in that last one is that Harbaugh didn't even get a sniff. And then Harbaugh, you know, he said some comments that then you had some of the players of Michigan, then he's not a Michigan man, and some of that stuff struck hard back then. And so now we move forward to this time, and, you know, obviously the rumors are out there that he's not even going to look at Michigan. And I think that's – everybody says, you know, he's competitive, he wants to go to the NFL. I think there's some deeper stuff going on in terms of what happened last time with him, his disconnect and feeling not – like he not get a lot of support from there over the years. I think it's coming home to roost right now. And, you know, they're going to end up with second tier. You know, this scenario can go any way, but it's saying that, you know, Michigan's in trouble right now. If I don't know if Les Miles is right fit right now, but they're in trouble. Harbaugh, you know, he's the king of the castle. You know, I think the 49ers, if he doesn't go to Michigan, is probably his best fit. But one thing I hope he learns from, if he thinks about what happened with Saban. See, Saban and with the Petrino here with Arkansas, they learned something about looking at the NFL. I mean, NFL is not for long. It's not something that is sustainable, like if you win in a major college program. And, you know, hopefully – you know, if he goes in the right fit, I mean, he's a great coach. He's a great mind. You know, San Francisco might be the right fit for him. But, you know, he's a hot guy. And there's a lot of craziness, but it says more about what's wrong with Michigan right now. The leadership is not there. They can't close deals. This one should have been easily closed. They should have rolled a truck up Palo Alto, and they should have just kind of shipped him out. But they couldn't do it. So that's it, and, you know, we'll see the debacle come out tomorrow. You know, everybody know Rich should be gone, but Rich, I wouldn't be surprised if they keep Rich.
That'd be a mistake.
You know, I mean, at this point, anything could happen. You know, you might bring back Gary Moeller. You know, right now they are in shambles. They are in shambles right now. And they scrambling, and that's why the delay is happening. I would say that Rodriguez has a good chance. I bet she ends up at Pitt. And he's going to end up settling. He just it wasn't a good fit for him at Michigan. He'll end up being all right somewhere else.
Yeah, I think Michigan is in a precarious position right now. I think they're at a fork in the road for this program, and they could either go on to continue to be what Michigan is supposed to be. They can get back to that, or they can go into that holding pattern that Notre Dame has been in for the last 10 years, where they're constantly changing coaches, they're constantly living off of an old mystique, they're trying to sell an old mystique, and they can't quite recapture that glory because they're constantly changing regimes, they're constantly changing systems, they're constantly changing coaches, and they can't get settled in on one particular guy. And that's a dangerous place to be with the Big Ten getting tougher. How tough it gets, we'll talk about that in a little bit as far as the perception of the Big Ten, but with Nebraska coming in, who knows if they'll continue to expand. But it's not going to get any easier. Michigan State is on the upswing, and so you could have a power shift within the state as far as getting those Ohio recruits, getting those Michigan recruits, and keeping them in the Midwest and keeping them in the Big Ten country. Maybe they start going to Michigan State. That's a possibility. So Michigan's at a fork in the road. And what they do with this particular situation is going to have huge ramifications for the future of this program as an elite college program, as an elite college job, period.
And you know the sad thing about this for Rich Rodriguez is the problem. If you look at it, I went back and looked at recruiting classes, and I think since Rich has been here, it must have been the 07 or 08. Well, at least two of his classes have been like at number 10. If you look at it consistently, Ohio State has been the only program that's had a top 10 recruiting class in the Big Ten, which is what you never used to see. You used to at least see one or two programs. Michigan always had a program recruiting class in the top 10 for a while. But, you know, Michigan hasn't, but that was all built on offense. The sad thing about it is the defense. And if you look at what Stafford played last night, they played the 3-4. The biggest problem, when everybody's criticizing, Rodriguez's biggest mistake is in defense. But the problem is, and I think this is where Robinson's getting the shaft, is that Robinson was playing what Rodriguez wanted him to play. Because I think he played the 3-3-5 at West Virginia. And what I've been saying, when you look at how Michigan's performed over the last 2 years, you cannot play five defensive backs in the Big Ten. Really sick.
Why do you need to?
And that's the shame of it. Because if you look at him offensively, he has top-flight recruits offensively. Defensively, he's recruited kids who would have gone to West Virginia. He hasn't recruited top-flight defensive players, and he's not playing. Michigan will win, depending on who comes to coach next year, if they keep the offense the way it is. If they just change the defense, they're going to win two more games. Just on playing the defense. And that's where people think, I mean, when people look at it, you know, if I'm looking at it, if you don't get Harbaugh, you get a guy like Les Miles who knows how to play the spread option. He plays a little bit more power look spread option, but he can always get you a defense. That might be the way for them to go. And then they got the guy from, whatever, the guy who was under Carr. And the thing about it is I'm worried that Carr is having too much influence on this process. That's the part that if anybody who's a Michigan guy got to worry about it, is that Carr is kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the guy who leaves and doesn't want anybody to mess up his legacy. I think, you know, I feel like Carr behind the scenes is having more impact in this process than people. It'll come out later because he's still around the program, you know, than anything. So, you know, if they can get Les Miles, defensively is what they got to correct. And part of that is just schematic. It's you can't play five defensive backs and expect to stop any. You just can't.
So Harbaugh's out. You're thinking Les Miles is coming in. What if Les Miles decides he wants to stay at LSU? What's the next shoe to drop?
Then they got to go to
Cal. Where do they go
the
after
guy,
that?
They're going to go to the guy from San Diego State who was under Carr. Was it Hoke or whatever it is? And he coached at Ball State, had a decent year at San Diego State. He'll be the guy that will come in. You know, I think any other option might be Cam Cameron. He's a Michigan guy. You know, I think it's going to be a guy who understands that Ohio State matters. It's kind of like when Lovie Smith came to the Bears. See, Weinstein never understood that. When Lovie Smith came to the Bears, the first thing he did was circle Green Bay. He said, we're going to beat Green Bay. And Lovie understood the rivalry. They're going to get somebody who understands you've got to beat Ohio State. The same way it was when Trestle came in. Trestle understood you got to beat Michigan. And so whoever they come in is going to understand that rivalry and is going to work, circle that calendar, and know that we got to be Ohio State. So it's going to be a Michigan guy like that that's going to come in if they don't get Harbaugh.
Ooh, that sounds like a mess, Captain. I mean, that sounds like a straight-up mess.
And I think what I would like to, because you hit on it, what I'm thinking in part is the Big Ten is a mess. I mean, in the sense that the only team that's been holding up the Big Ten, the only two teams right now that's kind of holding up the Big Ten a little bit is Wisconsin and Ohio State on a consistent basis.
Mm-hmm.
And Ohio State has been losing in the bowl games all the time. I mean, there's not that many teams that's been kind of just holding the mantle. I mean, when we talk about the dog meter, where's the dog meter?
Yeah, you know, I can't figure it out. I can't figure out why, you know, maybe Michigan State was fool's gold. I think the bottom of the league is so weak that it makes the top teams look. I mean, Purdue hasn't been good in about 4 or 5 years. Indiana has never been good. Northwestern is tough to beat at home. Minnesota has fallen off the map the last couple of years. Illinois has always kind of been mediocre at best, you know, 500 team. So there are a lot of teams in the Big Ten. I mean, that's about 4 or 5 teams that, you know, most years you can count those as wins if you play them. You know, and then you got to watch out for the Wisconsin, the Iowas, the Penn States, and the Ohio States and Michigan's on your schedule, but rarely do you play more than one of them, one or two of them a year. So, you know, you can come out of the Big Ten. You go undefeated in your non-conference. You can come out of the Big Ten with 2 losses. You know, that's if you don't split those tough games. You know, if you're a Wisconsin or if you're a Penn State, you can sneak out of the Big Ten with 1 to 2 losses, and you're a top. And, you know, perception will have you as a top 10 team.
That's right. You hit it. And the thing about it is, when I looked at Stanford last night, Stanford played like Big Ten teams used to play, right? Physical, run pro style offense, tough defense, get after you, get physical, to get all that for the rest of the week, going to beat you up, and we're going to have a pro level quarterback who's going to change formations. We're going to make you think, and we gonna do that. The way Harbaugh is coaching is how they used to coach in the Big Ten, and then everybody got enamored with the spread offense and got into a track race. And you know, some of these teams. And one thing I will say about Tressel is that he's come up with his schematic. He's been about, and he tried to. You know, it hasn't worked for him in the bowl games, but in those the rest of the season, it's got to work for him. He has his roadmap. He plays that. And he goes after. I don't see too many other teams doing that well. But the SEC is just crushing folks. And pride has to kick in for some of these teams at some point. So that's why I was hoping for Harbaugh to come to the Big Ten, because at least you get some swagger, you know, because we're missing the swagger. Other than Brett, I mean, Brett brings a little swagger. You know, they lost to TCU, but Brett definitely has an edge to him. Tressel has some on the edge, but I'm trying to see where the other people with edges, you know, who really are kind of prideful, you know, that, you know, that's something that we're missing. You got a guy like Mallett down here. Mallett started out at Michigan, you know, and so these kids are, you know, now in other places, you know, making things happen. So it's going to be
Arizona State, isn't it?
Yeah,
he has a quarterback from Michigan. You know, he had a good season this year at Arizona State.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
It's just disheartening because, you know, last week we tried to come on and defend the Big Ten and say they were going to do their thing, and they totally let us down. Totally let us down.
Oh.
I mean, not only were they getting beat, like, Wisconsin loses to TCU 21-19. That's a good game. You know, that's a good team beating another good team. But when you're in Michigan and you go out and you get banged by Mississippi State, Mississippi State is a good program, but they're still Mississippi State. And they bang you 52-14.
Yeah.
Then Michigan State gets smashed by Alabama, and Penn State just gets, gets it taken to him by Florida. I mean, it's hard to defend the Big Ten at this point in time.
I'm like, Woody Hayes rolled over in his grave. Busted back a roll.
Three times
on some stuff like this. So it's something that you got to go. You got to come in. You know, SEC is doing their thing and continue to do their thing. But, you know, at some point, people are going to have to get, begin to get some pride about what's going on with this, because it's becoming a joke now. And, it starts with leadership. It starts at the top. And so the ability to attract these coaches. But, you know, Hardball looking at the NFL. We got the coaching carousel going on. We got people staying who you thought were gone. You got people gone who you think were staying. But at all these things, it's all about leadership. It's all about organizations. You know, I know we're going to talk about the NFL, but for a guy like Cable to be out of a job after going undefeated in division, I mean, what happened to building stuff? You know, it's like organizations. There's a blueprint. You can see winning organizations, whether they're college or the problem. You hit it right on the head. They don't change offensive schemes every year. They don't come with 9,000 different offensive coordinators. They build continuity and stability. It's consistent.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see it across the board. It's not rocket science. They define who they are, and then they go after doing it. And you watch these people who are supposed to be pretty bright not getting it.
Yeah, the Big Ten is disappointing. Hopefully Nebraska brings something to it. I haven't really followed Nebraska's program and Pelini. But hopefully he can bring some of that swag to the Big Ten.
They voted, too. They lost to Washington after whooping Washington. I'm like, dang, I thought y'all would
have been. They did.
If you include Nebraska, and I said it don't know if it was a post I did on Facebook. I mean, if you include Nebraska, they took another hit. They took six.
Yeah.
You know, if you include Nebraska. You know, and Nebraska.
Yeah, not a good showing by the Big Teners. Not a good showing by the Big Ten teams. But on the other hand, you look at the SEC, and they reestablished themselves and reaffirmed themselves. And I think, they may have taken it a bit personal that people were down on them this year,
mm-hmm.
as down on the SEC as you can be. It's still top to bottom, the deepest conference in the land. But they pimp slapped them.
Yeah.
I don't know what else way to put it. They pimp slapped the Big Ten in every way they could, you know. They said if y'all number two, if y'all the second best conference in the country, there's a huge difference between you and us. And we're going to make that very evident to the viewing public.
Yeah, I mean, and it starts, they got great athletes, you know, that you can't deny. But it starts with, if you look at it coast for coast, they got some great coaches. I mean, think about it. I mean, even Mullen, at Mississippi State, I believe that's a coach. And, you look across, even Myers leaving, but you have Mustang coming in and White's going to be down there. You look at the quality of the head coaches, down there. I mean, it's going along with the athletes. Because we've seen a lot of teams with great athletes not win. So you got to have good coaches, too. And, they put together a group of good coaches down there. We'll carry them out. Pacino, even though he'll leave in darkness, under the cover of darkness, Pacino, I'm getting my name corrected, but he'll leave in the cover of darkness, but he can coach. They got all kinds of quality coaches down there, too, to go along with it, that's carrying them out. They gave it a serious beat down, and they gave notice. It's making me long for USC because USC is the only one that can tame them.
Yeah. I mean, USC, maybe Oregon's got some of that in them.
Yeah.
Maybe Oregon's got some of that mojo. We'll have to see. But I'll tell you what, man.
I know you want to roll to the NFL, so what's your NFL? When you look at this NFL deal, what do you think? I mean, the coaching carousel and – people who didn't
Well, it's in full swing right now. I mean, it's spinning and it's spinning. A few eyebrow-raising moves that kind of got me looking a little, you know, giving the people's eyebrow was Marvin Lewis getting an extension in Cincinnati. I'm trying to figure, again, we talk about ownership and management and how important that piece of the puzzle is, you know, when it comes to putting a solid team on the field, putting a solid system in place. And I understand that they're trying to keep continuity in Cincinnati, but I also have to wonder, when is enough enough? You know, I think Marvin Lewis is a really good coach. What I have a problem with is the fact that, you know, as an organization, they don't have proper facilities. You know, they don't have the necessary resources. They don't have a full scouting team. You know, if I'm Marvin Lewis, I want to go somewhere. Because, again, every year Marvin Lewis has got to compete with two class organizations and one organization that I feel is on the upswing. He's got to compete with Pittsburgh, which is a class organization which has it down to a science, and they have the blueprint for how to sustain success and how to ride the waves of change when things aren't going well, how to stay the course and stick with your philosophy and those kind of things. Pittsburgh has gotten it figured out. And Baltimore has proven that they can figure it out too. They may have a down year here or there, but they're right back the next year, within the next year or two. You know, those are two teams that rarely go into a rebuilding mode. You know, they plug in pieces because they have a system. It's like a great cook. You know, if you have certain dishes that you know how to make, all you need to do is find the right ingredients. And you, because you know what you're going to make and you know how to make it, you know what ingredients to look for. You know, and that's what it is with the Steelers. You know, they always find a nice rush linebacker. You know, they always find a bruiser running back. You know, because they have a brand of football. They always have a solid interior line. They always have good guards, good center. You know, they always have those pieces. You know, you go back to guys like Damani Dawson and Bettis and Bam Morris and Barry Foster. You know, you can reel off names of running backs. Dawson was in the middle for so long. You had other guys who were man in the middle. You know, you had Alan Faneca, who was there for a long time. They have always had strong interior alignment on offense and big backs and powerful backs. And that's been a part of their recipe. And on the defensive side, they've always had strong rush linebackers, whether you go back to, you know, Greg Lloyd and Kevin Green. You go to Joey Porter, James Harrison, and you can continue to go on. You can go back into the 70s, and they've always had a certain style of play. And so when you have that, you know what to look for. Your scouts know what to look for. They know what to look for in potential prospects that are going to fit in your system so that you have guys ready to step in. You constantly got a system of guys ready to step in. And the Cincinnati just has no philosophy. They're not putting resources into the franchise. I don't understand why Marvin Lewis, you know, I think Marvin Lewis is a really good coach. I think he's in a bad situation. I think he's going to continue to be in a bad situation. Unless he went in and talked him into it, saying, look, I'll stay. If you guys put some more resources out there for us to put a better product on the field, you know, because it's unbelievable how poorly run that franchise is. And then you look at the Raiders. They didn't renew their coach. Now, if they're not renewing their coach so that they can go and bring in somebody else who's a better coach, or if they're not renewing their coach because they want to be cheap, who knows? But we'll see. It's the Raiders, and we'll see whether they do what the Raiders do or if it really is a new era there. You know, but again, as you said, Cable goes undefeated in his division, and he loses his job. What does that say about the direction of the franchise? What does that say about the value of the job he did? Do they feel like he should have done better? I mean, you got to take some baby steps too, though. You know, that's a team that's coming off a pretty bad run. The fact that they were even competitive in that division was an improvement, and it was a plus, and it was a positive sign. But, you know, some of these jobs, you know, the Raiders job is open. I don't know if anybody will ever want the Raiders job. 49ers job is open. If Jeff Fisher loses his job, that's going to be a travesty, in my opinion. Jeff Fisher is, if not, you know, Belichick may be the best coach in the league. Some may argue that Fisher's the next best coach. If he loses his job, that'll be a travesty. And if he loses his job, the Titans are going to get whatever they deserve next year as far as losses, because they're going to be losing. Because he's done a lot with a little bit there several years. On several occasions, he's taken teams that weren't supposed to do a whole lot, weren't expected to do a whole lot, and has done a ton with a little bit of talent. So he's a good coach, and where he ends up, I think, is going to be important. He's going to play a big part, and it's going to be interesting to see as well. I think what we'll also continue to see, a lot of these teams hang on to coaches, which is one thing, reason I think, one part of the puzzle why I think Cincinnati is extending Marvin Lewis is because with the lockout situation and with the uncertainty of when it'll end or what's going to happen or how it's going to play out, you don't want to go into OTAs. You don't want to go into, you know, a summer where you don't have OTAs, where you don't have a full training camp with a new coach coming in, bringing in a new system, and now he's got, you know, 4 weeks to install a new system before you start to play an 18-game season, you know. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty. But like you said, it's about continuity. It's about having a plan. It's about having a vision. And the teams that do that, as much as the NFL is a copycat league, that's something that teams don't copycat. They don't copycat the Rooneys for whatever reason. They don't copycat the Patriots model, you know. Some people, the Chiefs are trying to do that. So, you know, it's hard to understand.
Yeah, I'm sitting here looking at just some of the reports, and for, you know, they said that there's not going to be an expansion in their front office operations for scouting, and they said that the, you know, having a practice facility is an immediate priority. And they said the only northern team without
an indoor facility,
one completed or planned. And that's why I'm
it's not 1965.
Yeah, and that's why I'm thinking. And this is why I'm looking at Marv Lewis, and I'm saying, so what's going to change? I mean, yeah, you're going to lose Ocho. You'll get some of the people out of the locker room. And you're going to be able to clean up some of that stuff, which probably is part of his agreement that, you know, he needed to get some people, you know, out of the locker room, and he needed to clean up the locker room and maybe make some changes. But, you know, the thing about it is, without some of these, how are you going to attract free agents? You know, it's just, you know, for him, he would be better off just leaving, and, you know, he's going to get a job in television. You know, it's
right.
One of those things where sometimes it's good to just leave, and if everybody knows you're in a bad situation, so if you left and took a job with NBC or Fox or something like that, people would understand. He would immediately be one of the hottest defensive coordinators people would want. But he could hold out like everyone else and wait for a head coaching position. I mean, everybody knows that he's doing amazing things with very little. But you're right. I mean, I think as we look at these coaching vacancies, you know, some of these people got to really – yeah, I know you only get one shot, and you got to take whatever job you get. But who, if you don't want to be the guy that ends up in Raiderland, and that's like your last stop. You know, some of these cats will actually start thinking. You know, you know, they got to think like some of these assistant coaches in some of these college teams who are the highest paid assistant coaches. You know, or assistant coaches. You know, somebody like Mustang when he did in Texas. You know, didn't take a job, but just got paid more money. I mean, rather than taking, you know, go interview for the regular job, but don't necessarily take it. But, you know, because you're not going to be there if you don't have a team with a good organization. I mean, I think Kyle was smart. Kyle was like, let's wait for the right fit. Looking for a team with a quarterback, a team with a really good player, player operations, you know, scouting operations, really good ownership. I mean, he signed the Florida because he came from the Steelers. You're not taking anything less than that. You might as well sit out, because you ain't gonna, don't mess up your legacy or your opportunity by just taking whatever you can take. So, I mean, these openings, I mean, we go back and we talk about Harbaugh and things like that. I mean, you really got to think, you know, if you're going to take the 49ers, are they, you know, they're the same ones that made Mike Singletary try to figure out how to win with Alex Smith. Is there going to be a change?
Yeah.
Right? You know, you see what you know. Singletary, you know, he's going to be a while before he even get a sniff. You know, you know, so it's fool's gold. You know, and yeah, you got Elway out there, but you know, y'all, both y'all got an ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so who gonna take that job?
And you got to coach Tebow.
You got to coach,
which
Tebow.
Adds a whole nother element of that adds a whole nother element of pressure, because maybe Tebow ain't gonna be right for every system. You know,
no.
Tebow ain't gonna be right for every system, and there's gonna be pressure to play him, and it's gonna be fanatical pressure. You know, it's not like you just inherited a team with, like, Brady Quinn as your quarterback. This is Tebow. This is, like, the most celebrated college football player in the last 30 years. And you have him as your quarterback, and he ain't really all that great. He's decent, but he ain't really all that great, and you could probably pretty easily find a better option. So, I don't know.
I don't know where to go with that one. You know, I mean, maybe Elway's saying, I'll come and I'll take the heat on, you know, this Tebow thing and move him out, and you know, you don't have to take Tebow. And I mean, you know, so those are things you have to look at. I mean, I just don't know who's going to take the Oakland job. But, you know, it's just, you know, Carolina seems like a decent job. Because if you can get healthy, you got young Clawson, you know, they got some parts down there. I mean, if you can get somewhat healthy, and you got, you know, you know, obviously you probably get Luck, you know, where they're sitting. You know, you might be able to move.
So if you're Carolina, are you taking Luck? Even though
I'm
you have Clawson and Toke?
For what I'm looking at, I'll take Luck, and then I may, you know, in this league you need more than one quarterback. You know, but you might look to trade it if you get a third round, fourth round pick, you know, and start building some draft picks around it. You know, if this kid is, I mean, I watched him play, and he's got all the throws. You know, the hard part about it is because so many people run the spread offense. Is it because they run the spread offense, he looks so much better? You know, because, you know, back when, you know, Marino and some of these guys they try to compare him with, and even back when Peyton played, there were many more people who ran pro-style offenses.
Yeah.
So do you look much better because everyone else is running the spread offense and cats don't have to read? You know, that's the part. I mean, he looks good. Luck looks good. But when you compare him to a system where everyone else, I mean, how many pro-style offenses are being run other than the way Stanford's offense is run?
Not very many.
And so, I mean, he looks good. He got all the throws. I'm not going to take anything away from him. But, you know, to me, I was thinking about that today. You know, does he look even – he looks good. He's a good pick to get. But does he look better because everyone else looks worse because nobody else is running a pro-style offense?
Right.
You know,
so is he really a six, but because it's a beauty package full of fours and he's the only six, he looks like a ten.
He looks like a ten. And that part, I can't, you know, he comes from a stock, his father was a quarterback. But I would say you take him, and he's a smart looking kid, he can play. And then if you can move one of those other quarterbacks and, you know, just get another draft pick and start stockpiling. You know, kind of what you were talking about before with the change in some of the collective bargaining agreement. If you can find ways to begin to stock draft picks, because, you know, it's going to be to your advantage because it's going to be, you know, a better business deal. But the other thing is that you don't know if Harbaugh goes to Denver, you know, does Luck pull, you know, the Eli Manning and John Elway, you know,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to play in Carolina. You know, that kind of craziness. If he does that, then I do what you were talking about. We were talking about off air. You know, then you try to leverage that for those first round picks, you know, and try and build that, you know, given that they're going to have a rookie wage scale. I mean, Carolina's in great shape. I mean, if you're an up and coming coach, I'll take the Carolina situation. you know, because at least they've proven they've been kind of patient with Fox. They don't look like they're going after any of these top-tier guys. But, you know, they've been a decent organization winning. You know, to me, that's an attractive job. You know,
yeah.
You know, I don't know who's out there. The person I'm hearing, I want to get your opinion on this, is I'm hearing Morning Way. And Morning Way looked like Goober when he was coaching in the Lions. How does this guy, he had no clue when he was coaching the Lions. He's a great offensive coordinator, but how does he surface as a head coach material. Well, he looked totally fish out of water as a head coach in Detroit.
I mean, I would call him North Turner 1.1. Not quite 2.0. not quite an upgrade over North Turner, but in that same mold, slightly better. Slightly better, slightly worse. You know, I mean, I think that's what he is. He's a North Turner type of guy that is excellent as a coordinator. But if you hand him the reins, I don't know. I mean, he's made Mike Vick look great. And, you know, the stuff that they've done with Mike Vick has, you know, really, they really put him in a position to utilize his talents. But at the same time, he ain't going to have no Mike Vick in Carolina.
No, you got to have Mike Vick in Carolina.
Unless he's taking Mike Vick with him, I mean, he's still Marty Morningwig. And that's the bottom line. I mean, Mike Vick made him look as good as he made Mike Vick look good. And anybody that's fooled by that and think that this man all of a sudden is a solid NFL coach is crazy. I don't know how else to put it.
Well, I mean, he may be a great offensive mind, which I think he is, but, you know, it's kind of like the Mike Marks. He's a great offensive mind, great coordinator, but he's not a guy you can see leading men to battle. And he just looked funny when he was with the Lions. And I just, you know,
it's like if you have a business.
It's
like if you have a business and you got a great HR guy or you got a great accountant. And this guy has, you know, caught a bunch of, you know, different things, loopholes that could have gotten that made you more money or whatever. He's a great accountant. He's done great work. But just because he's an expert at accounting doesn't mean that he can run the whole company.
That's right.
Just because he's an expert accountant doesn't mean he can run your whole company.
No,
he's great at what he does. You know, he's innovative. He's creative at what he does. But that don't mean he need to be CEO.
Yeah.
And I think, to me, that's what I see in Morning League. I don't think you want to go back down that path. He didn't. He just didn't look like there was anything there when he was in Detroit. It just didn't look like there was anything going on. Maybe he interviews well. Maybe talks a good game, but I don't see it.
Yeah, I just don't see the command, you know, that you need. So, I mean, I don't know how all this is going to fall. I mean, it looks like Gruden's probably going to sit out unless the, you know, Cleveland, some of these other jobs. You look like Gruden is having so much fun as an analyst. You know, he's too much fun. It's like he ain't in no hurry to go back to coaching.
Yeah.
And he's good at it. He doesn't look like he in any hurry to go back to coaching.
And I think, I think he actually is enjoying himself, but I think he likes that leverage. Like, if you're going to bring me out of this booth, you're going to have to pay me.
That's right. That's right. And,
you know, that leverage, if he was looking miserable, people would be less likely to back up the truck for him.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, and in terms of assistant coaches, I don't, you know, you got Ryan Cleveland, who's done a decent job, you know, but, I give him, he might be hurt by what's happening with his brother in a sense, you know, in terms of the personality.
It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. They're talking about, was it Fuel for coordinator for Giants? But there's not a lot of hot assistant coaches. I mean, the two big ones, well, at least, you know, Frazier getting the job in Minnesota, which I think is going to be some stability. And I love the way he already cut off the idea of Brett coming back. He's like, I don't see any way.
Excellent. Excellent.
So
we're moving on.
We loved you, but we're moving on. You know, so this is gonna be a great. These next few weeks are gonna be incredible. You know, with these playoffs and everything else. I mean, this is gonna be a great next couple of weeks because this thing is gonna unfold. I think when we talk up next Tuesday, there's gonna be so much craziness that have happened. But at the end of the day, when it does settle, it's always gonna come down to the quality of your organization. I don't care how you put it. And this is what we find out. You know, you and I, you know, we always talk, we get to draft time. We say this in basketball, football. Some drafts are GM drafts. And it really tells you about, you know, the quality of organization. You know, that's just like New England always seem to get every draft. They figure out a way for the most part to find you, like you said about the Steelers. I mean, some of these teams, they just find a way to turn over a rock. You know, New England drafts two big-time tight ends, and, you know, the next thing you know,
and a Pro Bowl rookie corner.
And
they got a Pro Bowl rookie corner.
You know, organizations, and I'm not trying to, you know, the old debate in Chicago about whether or not organizations win championships, but organizations set the context for you to be successful because they define who they are and they try to execute it, and the players can say it. They know who they are. Coaches know who we are. All the leadership, from the player leadership to the middle management, we're going to find out a lot about, whether it's in college or the pros, we're going to find out about leadership and organization who come out of this. You know, it's going to really be a stamp. You know, you got a feeling that Cleveland's going to make the right kind of decision, because you got a feeling that Homer was trying to set the context for what they're going to be. I don't quite have that confidence with some of these other organizations. You know, I'm still trying to figure out what's going on down in. I kind of liked the fact that Houston did what they did, but, you know, Kubiak's got to do something. You know, Jaguars, you know, they tired of being 8-8. But at some point, and so I'm with you on the continuity, you're right, but at some point you got to know, organizations got to know when they need to make that transition. All these different things come back down to these folks in management and decisions and people being able to have leadership. So we don't see a lot of
that. And I think the labor situation is playing a big part in that, why people aren't. I think in a normal year, I think Kubiak does lose his job. You know, I think in a normal year, Del Rio loses his job. But I think because of the current labor situation and teams just not having an idea of how this is all going to play out, I think this is going to be a real interesting offseason when we get to that point. We're not trying to fast forward the playoffs and talk offseason just yet, but when we get to the offseason, it's going to be real interesting because, you know, we talked about this on prior to the show, but the draft is going to be, I think we're going to see some interesting things happen with the draft. If it seems like, you know, you're going to be able to tell from the way teams maneuver in the draft what's going to happen next year as far as, is there going to be a rookie wage scale? If you see teams moving out of the first round of this year's draft or moving down in the first round of this year's draft to try and pick up additional high picks next year, then there may be a rookie wage scale on the way. So there are going to be some different signs that you're going to see. And I think this is the first kind of wave of those signs that you're going to see with teams keeping coaches that in a normal year I think would get fired, would get let go, but they're keeping them because that continuity for another year can be beneficial because you don't know how much training camp time you're going to have. You don't know how many OTAs you're going to be able to have. You don't know how much of those things you're going to be able to have in place or over the next 5 to 6 months after the season is over. So you're going to need to have that continuity with your coach. And you're going to need to have that continuity of system so that you can pick up things in a 3-week training camp, you know, or in a 4-week training camp and get going and hit the ground running, you know, when the season starts.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's kind of like when I play fantasy basketball and we have a week when there's a holiday. you got to know how to leverage that week to advance yourself in the standings. And good managers, like a week like that, you can win, you know, you can win like 11-1 if you're smart.
Yeah.
Right? And so, and I think this is the same way, is that in this kind of trend, this is where, again, organizations and GMs are going to leverage this because it's one thing to keep them because you don't know what the situation is, but you don't want that to set you back. And so, to the extent that you're able to do some of the positioning that you're talking about, moving down, getting draft picks, positioning yourself, you know, understanding the new financial system and how you can leverage it and make it work for you. I mean, it's still going to come down to quality organization making quality decisions and having enough, you know what I'm saying? All that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Some people may jump far ahead. A team like New England might take this thing and just shoot so far ahead of people, you know, if they can't catch up. A team like the Steelers may, you know, so those quality organizations are going to take advantage of this situation. And that's what I'm excited to see. You know, a team like Oakland might lose ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't have the continuity. They don't have the people on top of this. They don't have – so it's going to be good to kind of watch a lot of this stuff because, you know, it's just – you see it all the time and you just don't know what to say about it. It's just like these people are not thinking – you know, like the situation in Tennessee, that should even – that's a non-starter. Like, it should even be a contest about whose side the owner should be on, you know. Fish is going to take you to a Super Bowl. Now, I love Vince Young, but there ain't nothing in Vince Young that's going to tell me we need to stay together. So, it's that those decisions, all that stuff is going to be, you know, I'm starting to get little signs of where people might be cracking. And that's what's good about this. Folks are cracking a little bit, and don't mess around. A team like New England, team like Philadelphia, all these teams like this, they're gonna leverage this situation. And
mm-hmm.
don't let them shoot ahead of you. I mean, they might shoot so far ahead of folks on this, you know, it might be 2 or 3 years for people to get back because they winning this 11-1, you know, because they understand that this is the opportunity for them to even create more separation. So, yeah, Yeah, we're going to have a lot to talk about. We might have to get somebody to come on and be a guest guru, help break this down with us, you know, when we get to the office. We might have to do a 2 or 3 hour show just on this.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's gonna change the landscape of how teams operate. And, again, like you said, the teams that get out in front, you know, and you could see an organization who's made a move in management, who hasn't been a perennial winner, who hasn't been a perennial power, figure out this new system, and all of a sudden they make a huge jump, you know, because they figured out the system before everybody else.
It was crazy about this system. I just thought about, because you were talking, when you were off the air, I mean, hopefully you'll get more into what you said off the air. I mean, I know you just touched on it a little bit, but you could have a situation in football like we used to have way back in the day in basketball. You're like, well, how did the Lakers and the Celtics keep ended up with these free, you know, how did they end up with, you know, the first round pick, you know, when Red Auerbach and them used to make them deals, you know,
right.
End up, you're like, how the hell they end up with them? How the hell they keep end up with the top pick? But you could have a situation like that, you know, because it's going to encourage people to do more wheeling and dealing. And with the nature of running backs not being as durable, you notice, I mean, they haven't drafted as many running backs in a way. Running backs' durability has been in question. And so people, you know, if it's not an issue about, you know, taking the hit financially like you would when you had the signing bonuses and you didn't have a rookie pay scale, you know, you can have situations where these cats are like, damn, you know, making these moves who keep ending up with these high picks. Of these top teams because they got people to leverage, you know, if the money works out right. So it's this new system, because of the football, is different than basketball, where in football, you know, after you get past a couple picks, you know, and there's some sure things. After that, you know, with injury and durability and stuff like that, you'll trade anybody, depending on your situation. I mean, you'd be willing to trade. It's the right deal, you know, because there are – you know, other than somebody like a Luck, or there's only a few Lucks in a draft with that much of a guarantee that you can trade down. So it's going to be, you know, that willing to deal. It'd be nice for us to do a show like that.
Yeah, because, you know, what we were talking about off air was the potential for teams to eventually begin to tank. If there's a rookie wage scale in play, how will teams manipulate that without some sort of lottery format to prevent teams from doing that? You know, people look at the NBA format and, you know, they talk about tanking teams down the stretch and teams trying to tank to get the number one pick
And rarely does a team with the worst record get the number one pick in the NBA lottery, but people still bring up tanking. And so thinking about the whole tanking concept, if you get the rookie wage scale and I have a top 10 pick this year, well, if I'm San Francisco or, you know, one of those teams, Cleveland, one of those teams choosing at the back end of the top 10, I may say to hell with it. I'll deal this top 10 pick this year for a top 10 or for a first rounder next year and a first rounder the year after that, you know, if I can. Or a first rounder next year and a third round, a first and a third next year when there's a rookie wage scale. So now I get out of having to pay a huge signing bonus for, you know, this top 10 player. I get out of the hassle of having to cough over all this money to come up on the other end. Well, now the next year I got two first rounders. I got my own first rounder, and I have the other team's first rounder, plus I have an additional third rounder. Now, let's say I want to sacrifice next year, and let's say I decide to tank because there's no lottery system in place. I tank, you know, I go, you know, 3-13. So I go 3-13. I get the number one pick in next year's draft. I got the number one pick next year, plus an additional first rounder, plus an extra third rounder. I just made off pretty well and only had to sacrifice a season. You know, so again, or they decide to use those picks and leverage something, or leverage themselves another player, another piece, you know. But now they have multiple chips to maneuver and make a play with. And they're valuable chips. They're economically, all of this is, again, contingent upon a rookie wage scale. But if there is a rookie wage scale, now draft picks become more of a commodity because they're not such a huge cap hit as they are currently. And with seven rounds worth of draft picks, it's going to get real creative as to how teams begin to use those as chips. You know, and how they, and you may see more player movement. You may see more draft day trades, and it may make the league a little bit more dynamic in that way, because contracts are less gaudy and hard to move.
I think this is going to be, a great thing to observe and kind of see how the NFL was going. And you know, it makes this playoff kind of exciting. You know, there's a lot of talk around it. We got a lot of energy around it. And, it's going to create a great offseason. We're in the middle of the bowl season and got some good playoff stuff. So we're going to have a lot of good stuff over the next few weeks. It's going to be some hot stuff. And, you know, we'll have Ray back in the mix here in the next few weeks. And so, I'm looking forward to it.
Yes. But right now, what we need to talk about is the NFL playoffs, baby. It's on. It's tournament time.
Yes.
It's tournament time, and we got some good wild card matchups. We got some good wild card matchups. Before we get into the matchups, I just want to just get your opinion on your overall view of the playoffs. You know, looking at the 12 teams that got in, who's your likely champion, and who is that? Which give me two teams that are playing this weekend on Wild Card Weekend that you think are dangerous and could possibly wind up winning the championship. So give me your number one overall favorite, and then give me two teams that are playing this weekend on this Wild Card Weekend who you think are in position to possibly make a run to the Super Bowl.
Wow. I would say the Saints and the Packers are my team. Saints would be the number one. I just think, they had injuries and everything else. I think they're hitting their stride right now. I could see them putting together a series of games and just making that run to the playoffs. Through the playoffs and, getting there and winning the Super Bowl. I mean, I think once they get to the Super Bowl, I think they're confident enough to win. I think if they get to the NFC Championship, I think at that point they got momentum. And then the Packers, I think Packers are interesting because I think they're the one team the Eagles didn't want to see because, you know, with the killing the Eagles is the blitz and, you know, Dom Capers I mean, it's something about, I mean, you can't prepare for that. It's kind of like what I say about NCAA basketball. There's certain teams that play a certain style. If you have a week to prepare for them, you might get it right. But if it's kind of like, you know, getting ready for them, you know, that second day. When you know, if you played on Thursday, they played on Thursday, then you got to play on Saturday.
Yeah.
You only got a couple of days to get ready for them. I mean, even with this week, it's hard to get ready for the Packers.
Yeah, for all the D3 basketball heads out there, it's like playing Grinnell.
That's what it's like. And I just think if the Packers had to pick a matchup, I mean, the Eagles, that was the one matchup they didn't want to have, is against the Packers. And so I think the Packers is another team that can play. You know, as far as some of the other teams that are there, the AFC, I think that they're dangerous, but I think the NFC is so wide open that these wild card teams are as good as the teams who won the divisions. So that's kind of how I'm going with it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, and the teams I look at, the Saints, I worry about them going to Chicago after they beat Seattle, and they're going to beat Seattle. I worry about them going to Chicago. Without their run, Ivory's out, it worries me a little bit. Going up to Chicago and having to play the Bears in Soldier Field in 20 to 16 degree weather, I don't know how the New Orleans boys going to hold up. You know, they play a majority of the games in the dome or in a southern climate. I don't know how that's going. I don't know how that's going to fly. They've gone up to Chicago and won before in the playoffs, so it's not totally something that's foreign to them. But that worries me with the Saints. I agree with the things that you said about the Packers. I think what we may be on a collision course for is the Bears, Packers, Soldier Field NFC Championship game, because I think the Packers can beat the Falcons. In Atlanta or in Lambeau, I don't care where it's at, I think the Packers can beat the Falcons. I think they can beat the Falcons. You know, the Falcons are a good team, but rarely does the one seed make it all the way. I like the Jets. I know things are chaotic right now, but I think the Jets is a team of peaks and valleys, and they're in a valley right now. And before playoffs last year, they were in a valley, and then they peaked. And I think you have an up-and-down team, and right now they're down. And once when you're down, there's no place to go but up. You know, and I think that's one thing that they do well is that they rally. You know, when they get too high, they're going to come down eventually. And that's what their whole season has been. They'll get on a hot streak, and they'll tank for a few games. Then they'll get on a hot streak, then they'll tank for a few games. And right now they're in the valley. And I see them on the upswing, and that's where they want to be. If they were winning a bunch of games right now, I would pick against them. If they had won three or four games in a row coming into this, I would pick against them. Because anytime they're up, they start feeling themselves a little too much. That swagger, they get swagger overload. You know, they got swagger coming out their ears and spilling on themselves, and it's all everywhere. People slipping on it in the locker room. They're just swagger around. There's just too much swagger. And if you eventually they fall off for a bit, and the law of averages, you got to keep your swagger level at a certain place. You know, you can't get too high, can't get too low. And right now they're low, so I think the Jets are going to come up. They got a good defense. They have the necessary pieces to be successful in the playoffs. They're going to be playing the Colts indoors, which I think plays into their hands more than anything. Peyton Manning, wherever you play Peyton Manning, he's going to be Peyton Manning wherever he's playing. But I think their defense is going to be able to be their defense when you don't have to take weather into account. I think you're going to see that Jets defense be the Jets defense indoors. And I don't think that bodes well for the Colts. The Colts haven't been able to run the ball consistently. The running game has improved a little bit lately, but I still don't think that they have established a solid flow with their run game to be able to go against a defense of the caliber of the Jets. So I like the Jets to hit a hot streak and get back on that upswing. The team I think that's going to take it all. Wow. you know, New England looks good, but I don't know. I like New England, but I don't know. I think if they get in a one game situation, you know, I have a hard time picking New England. I think I'm going to go with Green Bay. I think I'm going to go with Green Bay winning from the sixth seed and going all the way to the Super Bowl and winning it all. I'll have them beat New England. That's what I'm going to go with.
Yeah, and I didn't pick it. I didn't go through and pick I did want to come. You know, I've been watching the Jets, and I just think the Jets are 1 year away from where we want them to be. I think Sanchez, you know, he's in the sophomore year or whatever it might be. Is it the second year? Yeah.
Yeah, it's the second year.
Yeah, second year. And I just think he's one more year away from where we want to be. I think Revis sitting out hurt them, kind of threw the defense off a little bit. In terms of continuity, they didn't have that preseason together. I think the Jets are like a year away. I think they're going to be next year what we thought they were going to be this year. That's when I watch them, that's just what I feel. I know Rex wants it to be more than that. But, you know, you are who your record says you are, as Parcells used to say. But, I New England is beating it into me. I like the way my Steelers play down the stretch. I think they started to hit their stride a little bit. I just think it's all going to come down to New England's defense. You know, can they continue to play just well enough to keep teams at bay? Because I think the offense is going to play well. I think people quite haven't figured out how to stop them tight ends. Because it requires some matchups that you got to have. So you're going to have to put some pressure on Tom Brady, but you're going to have to be able to cover those tight ends. And trying to look at who can do that and still kind of hang with them, I think New England is going to be a tough out now that they kind of got their stride. And the NFC, I just haven't quite figured out who's going to do what. You know, I'm almost agreeing with you about the Packers. I think if Packers can get a couple games under the belt, get some confidence, they could be tough to beat coming out of the NFC. I'm looking at the NFC. It's hard to tell who's going to do what.
It's so much about matchups.
Yeah, it's all about matchups.
Because I can tell you one thing. If Mike Vick gets hot, there's nobody stopping him.
No, nobody's going to stop him.
Because his style of play is just too hard to game playing for. And, just as much as I think the Packers could go all the way, yeah, I think the winner of that Packers-Eagles game is going to have a whole lot of say in what happens in the NFC.
Yeah.
Winner of that game, you may have the two best teams in that game. Atlanta's good, New Orleans is good, Chicago is good, but the dynamic option that Mike Vick is, he can change the game by himself. And then I think the Packers right now are a team that is very dangerous. The defense is playing very well. If the offense begins to click the way it can, they're extremely hard to beat. And honestly, if Rodgers doesn't miss two games in the middle of the season, they may actually win the Central and be a two seed.
If he doesn't
miss the rest of that Detroit game and miss that Patriots game, they may be a two seed.
And I think the biggest issue they got right now, I mean, think of Atlanta, is that both these teams know they believe they can beat Atlanta. I mean, you take Vic and put him on that carpet, and it's like a homecoming, you know, that'll be a tough matchup for Atlanta. Because the emotions that'll be tied into it. And, you know, Vic, you know, going back to where it all started, and then the Packers.
But see, if the Eagles win, they go to Chicago first.
They go to Chicago? Oh,
yeah. Because they'll be the higher seed.
They'll be a higher seed
than the Saints. Because the Saints are a wild card.
They don't really
so the Saints
see that
are a five seed, so the Saints will go to Atlanta. Which, again, I don't think
yeah,
Atlanta,
see, I think
Atlanta,
Atlanta
is
Atlanta,
a very
Atlanta's
tough
a,
situation.
Yeah
Atlanta's in a very tough situation because you're putting explosive offenses on that damn carpet.
Yeah, Atlanta's in trouble on that one. Cause,
I don't want Green Bay coming in on the carpet with that offense. I don't want New Orleans coming in with that offense on the carpet. And damn sure don't want to see Michael Vick on the tarp.
Yeah, because if you look at it like that, it's hard to tell. I'm gonna go with the Packers, man. For some reason, I like it. You mean Cutler and the Bears have shown me something? Because if you got to come to Soldier Field, it's cold in the Ooh, it's gonna be nothing nice.
See, the thing with the Bears is they can maintain their balance. If they can maintain their balance and they don't get too pass happy, and they're just so inconsistent with whether or not they can stay the course.
Yeah.
I don't trust Martz to stay the course. That's my problem with the Bears.
I'm gonna get real crazy on this, and you're gonna say I'm a homer. I'm gonna say it's gonna be the Packers and the Steelers.
That's not that crazy.
In my opinion, that's not
that crazy. Like, I could see the Steelers making it. I just don't know. Like, Brady eats that 3-4 up.
Yeah.
When he plays the Steelers, Brady eats 3-4 is alive, which is why I have a hard time picking him not to win. Because you got the Ravens, you got the Jets, and you got the Steelers. To me, are the main challenges out there. And they all run a 3-4, and he just devours 3-4s. Brady right now devours 3-4s. And I just don't think those teams are going to be able to get past the Patriots. But I can see it happening. You know, one game, anything can happen. I can definitely see it happening. So I don't think it's crazy, but I just think it's unlikely.
Well, the reason why I say it is that because I think they will come, schematically, they'll come up with something enough to slow them down. And you only got to slow down a couple of possessions because I don't know if the Patriots' defense are going to stop the Steelers' offense. So I think Polamalu might come up with a couple plays to force a punt. And he can cover those tight ends. And so I'm going to go on a limb on that one. I'm going to say Steelers and Packers. I'm going to say Steelers and the Packers.
Steelers and Packers, like it's 1970.
I guess 1970. What the hell's going on out here? That's what I'm going to go. I say Tomlin's going to do it again. It's an ugly way to win.
Hey, I wouldn't be mad at that.
He's going to win it ugly. I think the only bump in the road is really, like you said, is the Patriots because of Brady.
The biggest storylines for me in this playoff, the biggest storylines is, Mike Vick getting to the Super Bowl. That'd be a great storyline to watch. That's really what you start to get into as the playoffs go along are the storylines of the teams that continue to play. That's one storyline I would love to see play out. Aaron Rodgers getting to the Super Bowl and being able to get the Favre Monk, officially retiring Brett Favre. If Aaron Rodgers wins the Super Bowl this year, he officially retires Brett Favre.
That's right.
You know what I mean? I think he slammed the last nail in the Favre legacy. If he wins the Super Bowl, people in Green Bay will forget about Favre for a good minute. And it'll allow Favre to move on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Because he won't be the only one in the last 40 years to have won something up in Green Bay. It will allow Favre to some peace, I think. I think it'll give them both some peace of mind. I think it'll allow people to forget Favre, to forgive Favre, and it'll allow Packer fans to forgive Favre and forget about Favre and move on. It'll let the Favre fans forgive the Packer organization. It'll validate Ted Thompson and his decision to stick with Aaron, to go with Aaron Rodgers. It'll just bring peace to the frozen tundra. So that's another storyline. And then you got the Jets. You got the Jets, wilding out on their way to the Super Bowl, which I think would just be a circus. It would be a circus atmosphere. What will Rex say next? Tomlin going for two. I would love to see that. Like I said, I'll run through a brick wall for Mike Tomlin if he was my coach. He just strikes me as that kind of guy.
He just seems like that the kind of guy that can motivate you to do something like that. And then the Saints repeat. I mean, those are the main storylines that I would like to see develop over time. I want the Seahawks to go away. I want them to go away fast. I want them to go away quickly. I'm acting like they don't exist right now because it's just pitiful. 7-9 should not get you in the playoffs.
Pete Carroll over there, you know.
I tell you, man, Pete, this dude is just, you can't get rid of Pete Carroll, man. You
Pete,
really can't.
Pete got pictures of Pete's been going to church. Something going on.
I'm telling you, man, he got a four-leaf clover tattooed on his back or something, man.
This cat stumbles into more opportunities than anyone. But, yeah, if they beat the Saints, boy.
And, see, that's another storyline that you could see developing is that you have this losing record team making this run. And I just hope to God that that don't happen because I do not want to see the Seahawks after this weekend.
Oh, my goodness. That's one storyline you don't want to see at all. Yeah, that's not a good storyline.
Here's an interesting fact that I stumbled upon when I was doing some research for this week's show. I was looking at the first-round draft order, and one thing I noticed is that it's like when there's a tiebreaker, it's determined by strength of schedule.
Mm-hmm.
And I was looking at the strength of schedule, and maybe you can help me understand this, because this was a bit surprising to me. You know, we talk about the NFL and we talk about the parity of it. The fact of the matter is that of the 12 playoff teams, only three have an opponent, have a strength of schedule over 500. The Patriots are at 504, the Steelers are at 500, and the Packers are at 520. Everybody else has a strength of schedule percentage under 500. Now, if you look at the teams that aren't in the playoffs, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams out of the other 20 teams. So 7 out of the other 20 teams that aren't in the playoffs have strength of schedules under 5. Yeah, 7 teams have strength of schedules under 500. With the Bengals, the Panthers, the Bills, and the Bengals, Panthers, and Bills have the highest, their opponents had the highest win percentage. So, like, that was just odd to me. That, like, is it really that easy? Where if you get a schedule that's kind of favorable, you get in, and if you don't, you're going to struggle? Is there something I'm missing?
I'm trying to pay attention. I don't know if you see this Ohio State game.
Nah.
I got on my monitor. It's the weirdest ending that you've ever seen.
Is Arkansas coming back?
Arkansas is coming back. They were at 31-26. They blocked Ohio State's punt. And they're basically going in to try to score to take the lead. But they were on it looked like they were on the 20 or 30. They must have been a 30 going in. Mallett drops back. No, they're on the 20. They're still on Ohio State's 20. Now, the first play, with like a minute and something left, Mallett throws an interception.
Oh, wow.
Like, Ohio State going to lose another game. So I'm sorry. I couldn't believe it. I'm sitting here. Every time I look up, the score is changing. And Ohio State had a big lead. And almost, you know, now they got the victory formation. My goodness, they backed in to a damn victory. So sorry about that. I'll go but back to your strength of schedule argument. I'm trying to figure out. sorry about that. That was the craziest thing. We're just talking about it. Oh my goodness! You got to see this thing. I'm happy for it, but damn, they down there back there. They all like the look on those kids' faces are like, oh my goodness, not again. but. So the bottom teams playing in terms of a strength. Now, you look at like Cincinnati, because you said Cincinnati had a high percentage.
Yeah.
And so some of those teams, I mean, can you think about their division they're in? You know, with Baltimore in Pittsburgh.
Right.
And then, you know, depending on who they play in the NFC, you know, might, I think they play the South, the NFC South, right?
Yeah, so absolutely. So, it goes into who you play more so than the quality of your team.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I think you have to have a good team, but I think the difference between a poor team and the better teams, I think, sometimes boils down to schedule and who you draw. Like the Chiefs, they had the lowest of all teams all season strength of schedule with a 4-14 win percentage of their opponents. So they probably had their own division, plus they drew the NFC West. You know, so it was interesting to see. That's part of the reason why I think I'm liking the Packers right now. When I saw this, is part of the reason that informed my pick of the Packers and why I think the Packers have a good shot. Is because they did play a fairly hard knock schedule, and you know they came away with it still in contention all year. They still had an opportunity to win their division.
Yeah,
and you know,
yeah. They're battle tested. You're right. They're battle tested.
And then there's the Patriots, who are at 5-4, who are the next best team outside of the Packers in the playoffs, which is why I'm going Packers. Part of the reason I'm going Packers, Patriots. But I just thought it was real interesting that, you know, the Browns have a 570, the Panthers at 574, the Bengals are at 582, the Bills are at 578. And, you know, they all suck.
Yep.
So, you know,
Because you draw in the NFC South and then you also got to play within your division, that's a tough draw they had.
Yeah.
Even in the Bengals.
I think it's just the illustration of how parity is built into the system. You know, I think this is an example of how parity is built into the NFL system. So, depending upon who you draw, that's going to give you an opportunity to win some games and compete and be in it. Which is why you have the Chiefs making the run that they made. You know, yeah, the Chiefs are the only one with a win percentage below 45 in the playoffs. You know, their win percentage is way down there compared to most of the other ones. I mean, the Rams are. If the Rams had made it, their win percentage probably would have been about 445. They're 449. So, yeah. I mean, the Chiefs are a real question mark. Seattle's a real question mark just upon who they played. But it was just interesting to see because it was kind of a stark contrast between the teams that were in and the teams that were out. And maybe this year is an anomaly where you only have three teams who are in who have a 500 win percentage or over, and you have 13 teams who are out who have over 500 win percentage on their strength of schedule. So it's just a little tidbit I had picked up when I was snooping around doing a lot of research.
It's interesting that neither one of us, I mean, everybody's talking about the Ravens, and neither one of us even mention the Ravens. And I think that Ravens Chief game is going to be a great game. You know, it's kind of
I think it's
going to
be a really good game,
team.
Too.
Yeah, that stadium is going to be rocking. It's a tough place to play. And, you know, the Ravens can score, but they're not explosive. So it's not like they can just run away.
Yeah, and if the Ravens win, don't they go to New England next week, I think?
Yeah.
And where do they go?
Yeah,
and that's what played a major part in that for me is that I think if the Ravens win, they're going to have to go to New England, and I don't know if they're going to beat the Patriots in New England. I like that team, but I don't know if they can beat the Patriots in New England. I wouldn't pick them to beat the Patriots in New England.
Now, did they beat Patriots? Was it last year, the year before? Did they beat the Patriots in the playoffs?
I think they did.
Yeah,
I think they may have.
Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it could be one of them slobber knockers to be the Steelers.
Yeah, the AFC
Ravens.
Is loaded, man. The AFC is really loaded. I mean, you got Peyton Manning, you got the Jets, you know, and Peyton Manning. You got the up-and-coming Chiefs and the Ravens who have been there time and time again and proven that they just know how to get it done in the playoffs. And then you got the Steelers and the Patriots waiting. But again, you look at these playoff teams, and with each one, one of the things that they all have in common is you have tight organizations. You got the Chiefs who have brought over Scott Pioli, and you know he's brought over people from the New England organization. You know, the Jets, you know, as crazy as things are now, the Jets have been pretty consistent as far as keeping the right people. You know, Tannenbaum and those guys have done a pretty good job of developing a solid culture, and they seem like they know what they're doing. The Colts are constantly in it. The Ravens, Ozzie Newsome and his crew there has kept that franchise at the top of the league for the last 10 years. You know, it's really the Saints, great organization. Packers and the Eagles, solid organizations. You know, the Bears are one of those questionable organizations where you wonder, how did they do that? How did they make it work this year? You know, because the Bears, they're kind of a mid-level organization. I wouldn't say that they figure it out every 5 years. They get it right. Every 5 years or so, the Bears will get it right, and they'll strike the iron while it's hot, and they'll make a run. The Falcons seem to have recovered and learned from some of the missteps that they may have made as an organization in regards to how they handled Mike Vick when he was there. Hold on 1 second. I think we got a caller coming in. Let's see who we got here. Hello, caller.
Yeah, what's good? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call. Would you fuck Howard Stern?
Hello, D?
Yeah.
There you go.
What the? Slap
yeah, he
off
go.
What the hell?
See, it was a 111 number, so I thought maybe somebody was trying to Skype in.
Yeah.
We all good. I have my finger on the trigger, too. I have my finger on the trigger in case he tried to pull some 20 stuff. Like, this ain't no cell or landline, so I'm going to keep this one close to the vest.
I'm like, they let him out of the Looney Tunes early. Oh, my goodness. They let him out early.
Didn't they, though?
Oh, my goodness. Well, we keep on moving. It's like the cat running out in the middle. It's like the guy running out in the middle of the field with no clothes on.
Yeah, you tackle him. You hit him with the forearm shiv, and you keep him. You run the next play.
I thought that was an insider for the Michigan.
I thought it was, too. That's why I let him on.
It might have been somebody trying to take us off the scent.
So here's something I want to pick your brain on. You know, looking at each of these games, give me one player that you think is going to have to play a major role for either team. One player on either team that's going to have a major impact. If you're looking at that Saints Seahawks game, who will be that guy in your opinion?
Well, I think on the Saints, you know, given we talk about the Ravens, it's, you know, Reggie Bush, giving them some kind of balance, keeping people honest.
Yeah.
So having somewhat of a running game is going to be very important. And then I think for Seattle, it's going to be Marshawn Lynch. Just being able to have somebody who can control the ball, keep the Saints off the field, you know, because that's how they got to play them. They can't get in a shootout, so they need to get Lynch some touches. I think they said the possibility that Hasselbeck might play, but you still, need to have Lynch, you know, controlling it, moving the chain. They gotta shorten the game. So that's what I would say for Seattle and New Orleans. And I think the Saints could win if they didn't have a lot of running, but I think they need to start building that in for their next round game. I think they need to get that running going to keep that balance.
Yeah. And it's kind of been a lost year for Reggie Bush. I mean, he got hurt early, and he just has never been able to get back on track.
Had to get a Heisman back. It seemed like that was so long ago, but it was the same year.
It seemed like it was years ago. Remember when Reggie Bush had to get back his Heisman? it seemed like a good minute ago where he had to get that back. But I mean, maybe he's missing Kim. Who knows? You know,
that's a Kardashian effect. Leave it alone, athletes. Leave it alone.
Leave it to the crazy.
Take your hand off the Kardashian.
We have to talk about
Basketball Wives one day.
Oh, man.
I've been watching that stuff that's told me.
Isn't it crazy, man? If you don't know what we're talking about, okay, there's a show on VH1 called Basketball Wives. And basically, it's a reality show. And basically, what they do is they follow around either NBA players, babies, mamas, exes. None of these women are actually married to an NBA player. Actually, I think one of them is married to an NBA player, actually married to the person as the show is going on. But the marriage is horrible. It's a horrible, horrible relationship.
And
they should probably get divorced, but for some reason, she'd rather just complain about getting divorced than complain about being in a terrible relationship than actually getting out of it. But that's a whole another situation. But it's just real interesting to watch. It really makes you not envy NBA guys at all.
Oh, my goodness.
With the type of women they got to put up with, man. I'm glad I'm a regular dude.
I'm glad I'm a regular dude. Because
I don't know if I would be savvy enough to navigate that minefield.
Oh, man. They just crazy. They throwing me off. But, I understand a little bit why Reggie is struggling. But he's got to get it together for this playoff. They need him.
And he got to get it together for his career, man.
His career. He need to get
like,
back
this is
home.
A dude who, when he came out in 06, man, everybody thought he was the next big deal.
I mean, Texas looked great about taking Williams. I mean, Williams has had a pretty decent, solid career as a defensive player. I mean,
he's actually been to a Pro Bowl.
Yep. You know, they don't look too bad with that pick now. Everybody criticized them. But, you know, they took the Fink strategy, start with both sides of the line. You know, start with the line. And you can build from there. So, yeah, Bush needs this. He had a good run last year and a good Super Bowl, but he needs to have consistency, with his career. And so he's going to need to do is give him something in this game. And, we'll see. And then you want me to get the Jets and Indy?
Yeah.
The Jets, I mean, it's not going to be one person, but they got to figure out how to get a rush. And that's going to be tough to do with Peyton. Because, it's kind of like you talked about with Brady, eating up 3-4 defenses. Peyton kills people who blitz. But they got to figure out how to get pressure, that front. So that front seven has got to figure. They got to work some things. And they got to do similar to what the Steelers did when they beat them. They always rush 4 or 5, but they came from different angles. So it might have been 3 linemen and a safety. It might have been, 2 linemen and 2 linebackers. But, and they still have people back in coverage. But they got to figure out how to get pressure without giving up too much in coverage. So that's their big thing. And then Indy's got to run that football. They got to have balance. They can't be too one-dimensional. So they got to really be able to run that football and control that line of scrimmage. They're at their best when they rush the football. They have that balance. I think I heard a stat that they were undefeated if they had 20 or more. Is that 20 or more rushes? Something like that. It's going to be about the ground game for them, trying to rush it and then Peyton working that play action off of getting established in that ground game to keep Indy off balance. But Indy's got to figure, I mean, Jets have got to put some pressure on him, got to knock him around. They got to get him on the ground, get him complaining. You know, that's the kind of game they got to create against it. I mean, they got to get a rush. Somebody up front's got to make something happen. And they haven't been able to do it up at this point, but they're going to need to do it if they're going to beat Indy.
Yeah, you know, I think that's gonna be the key. I think they'll be able to do it because I think they'll be able to actually take advantage of their speed on the. I think being in the dome helps their defense more than it helps Indy's offense, which is why I feel like they have an advantage in that game because, you know, I think being in the dome, Peyton Manning is gonna be Peyton Manning wherever he's at. His receivers outside of Reggie Wayne are going to be okay wherever they're at. You know, they're just going to be average guys. I think that's just what they are. But I think that defense going from cold to being able to play in ideal conditions is going to be able to do what it needs to do against Peyton Manning. It's going to free that defense up, and I think that's going to allow them to get that pressure up the middle. That's always been, I think, one of the big keys is to get that pressure up the middle and to find ways to get in Peyton Manning's face. And with his I don't want to say his lack of a rhythm with his receivers, I think if you're ever going to, you know, if Peyton Manning was ever right for the pick and this is the year, just because his receivers are so banged up and he just doesn't have that rapport that he usually has with his receivers.
And I would add that Sanchez has got to convert some third down plays, and they got to be doing well on third down conversions. He's going to make some plays for them to win, but he's got to be good. He's going to be in a third down situation. You know, they're going to be, you know, if they can stay in third and short, and he can make those third down conversions, they got a good shot. I mean, that's the other thing, you know. You can also be Peyton by having him sit on the sideline and not play.
So, it's
time of possession. That's another way to beat him. He can't hurt you if he can't throw. If he's standing on the
mm-hmm.
sideline, so you know you're gonna need Sanchez to also make a few third down plays where he's moving the chains. You have to be good with that. So that's gonna be a good game to watch. You know, a lot of plays.
Yeah, that's gonna be a great game to watch. Great defense against a great quarterback. Something's got to give. So those are always fun games to take in and watch.
Well, Baltimore and KC, it's Jamal Charles and Jones. You know, the running game is going to be big for them. They can't be one dimensional. They're going to have to really commit to the run on that. And then, I mean, on Baltimore side, same thing. It's Rice. You know, Rice in the passing game and running is going to be good. And, you know, Flacco's going to make a couple plays. You know, can he do what he did in Pittsburgh earlier in the season? Can he make a couple plays down the stretch to help them get over the hump? But, you know, Ray Rice is going to be the key in that. And then, you know, are they going to, Kansas City side, they can't be one-dimensional. They're going to have to really run that football. The Ravens defense hasn't been the intimidating defense that they've had for years. They have been vulnerable. And so, you know, can you take it and then win the special teams? And I think that's where Kansas City can hurt you is in the special teams. They got some folks who can do some damage. So, you know, this is going to come down to those kind of things. Special teams are going to play a big role in a game like this where both teams can make plays offensively, but they're not ultra-explosive. So special teams are going to be big in this game.
Yeah, and it's I think, to me, the guy that's going to need to have a big game, I think Anquan Boldin is going to need to show up.
He's going to need
to show up and make some plays.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to show up and make some plays. He's kind of been missing the last couple of weeks. And if Flacco's having a good day, I think it's going to be because Bolden is having a good day. and Bosa's making plays and helping that team move the chains, because he's the one receiver that makes them explosive. He's the one receiver that gives them that pop, that explosiveness in the passing game, that then opens up lanes and it opens up opportunities for Ray Rice to do what he does. And when teams lock up Bolden, when they shut him down, it can limit Rice's effectiveness.
Yeah. And you probably said play with Dwayne Bowe on the other side, you know, to be that threat and loosen Baltimore's defense up a little bit, to make some plays. It's probably the same thing. I mean, those two guys are, you know, whichever one of those guys has a little better game might be a difference as well. Because they're both, you know, Bo has been having a monster season. So he's the thing. But I think the team that can establish somewhat of a running game, I think, is going to win this. You know, that they can, so the team that can be least one-dimensional, is going to win this.
Yeah, I think that's where it's going to, I think that, because both teams are still first teams right now. And so I agree. I think you're right on. The team that can, whoever dominates in the trenches, is going to have the best opportunity to win the game. It's going to have the best opportunity to establish some sort of balance and win that game. Because it's that, you know, both of these teams are run first right now. Kansas City, one of the better running teams in the league. If the Ravens can stop them from running, that's going to take away, you know, their main weapon. It's going to take away their biggest weapons. I agree. That's going to play a huge part in how things turn out.
And then we got Green Bay and, you know, and the Eagles, you know, I guess for the Eagles, you know, Mike Vick and the offense goes without question, and so their biggest thing is can they solve the blitz? Because you know Green Bay gonna bring the blitz, and the way I see it is if Matthews is gonna be the key to this game, you know, he can just run rough shot and put pressure and cause havoc. I think that's going to be big. And then on the other side, you know, can Philly D, you know, make Rodgers uncomfortable and get him to really slow him down a little bit. But I think the biggest person on this is going to be Clay Matthews. If Clay Matthews is dictating the game and is having his way, it's going to be a long day.
Yeah, for me, I think it's going to be I think it's going to be Desmond Bishop and the inside linebackers. If they can get pressure up the middle on Vic and force him to make hot reads, or you know, I think it's going to be that linebacking core for the Packers that's going to have a major impact, because if they can make Vic have to make quick decisions and hot reads, that's what's going to be helpful for them. But then I was going to put their corners on an island. And that's where Philly can be dangerous. And so I think the other thing that's going to, for Philly, the major impact is going to come offensively with DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin. Because if they can get separation with one-on-one coverage, if the Packers are blitzing, that's where they're dangerous. The Packers are going to have to limit the Eagles' ability to hit the home run. The Eagles are like the Phillies in a lot of ways, where, you know, they're a team full of sluggers, and they want to take you out of the park. They're not going to small ball you. They're not going to dink and dunk you. They like to hit the home run, and they got home run hitters at every position. So if you allow them the opportunity to get behind you, you can kiss it goodbye. They're going to take it to the house. So I think, you know, for me, it's going to be the Packers' linebacking core being able to get some pressure and generate pressure on Vic from a lot of different angles, from the middle, from the side. I think they're going to have to mix it up to make him have to make reads to different spots, quick reads to different spaces. Because when you let him sit back there, you're gonna get picked apart if you let him sit back. And I think that speaks to the evolution of Vic. You know, I think when you get to a point, I mean, how do we talk about beating Brady? How do we talk about beating Manning? We talk about putting pressure on them and blitzing them and making them have to make quick decisions and making them have to get rid of the ball quickly, because if you let them choose when they want to get rid of the ball, you're going to be in trouble. And I think that's one of the true evolutions of a quarterback, is when really the only way to attack them is to bring pressure and bring it hard and bring the house as much as you can without leaving yourself exposed. When quarterbacks get to that point where that's really the only way you really have to gain, that's all you got to game plan for them, I think that's when a quarterback has kind of arrived and hit that other level, where really the only way to beat this dude is to put him on his back.
Yeah, and I would say, and that's why I think, you know, McCoy is going to be important as well, because he's going to keep people honest. You know, he can establish a little bit of running, and, you know, I think when they've had their magical games, the Eagles, McCoy's had a couple runs that caused even the coordinators to have to be conscious of them, which continues to provide Vic with that play action in that time. And I think that's something that they got to really make sure they establish, is that running game as well, where McCoy can get his rhythm going so that you can make people hesitate a little bit on blitzing or creating opportunities where you might be a pop or run or something like that. So McCoy is going to play an important role. I mean, that's kind of difficult because, you know, normally, you know, the Eagles, you know, they're not a run-first offense. They run when they have to. They run for some semblance of balance. But, you know, that'll slow down those inside linebackers, keep people honest and at home a little bit. And they have to look at doing some of that. And I can also see them doing a little bit more max protection, where they might have a couple more people in and maybe sending Macklin or Jackson deep, or, you know, maybe two receiver routes and stuff like that. So you might see a little bit more of that too, as well, on some occasions, as well. So this is going to be a good game. It's going to be a battle. I watched the Philly Green Bay game in Philadelphia before. And it's crazy. The Philly fans are out of control at the link. So this is going to be a lot of energy around this.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to be like I said, it's going to be a fun playoff. There are a lot of good teams other than Seattle. There are a lot of good teams, and there are a lot of good matchups. So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Thinking about some of the teams that didn't get in this year, some of the teams that didn't make the playoffs. It's going to be interesting to see how things work out next year, because you know, you got a team like Tampa Bay, a team like Detroit, who are young. St. Louis in the NFC, in the AFC. Oakland looks like they're coming around. And then you also have, you know, a Miami team that's pretty solid. I didn't even know. Miami was 6-2 on the road and 1-7 at home?
Yeah.
Are you serious? I didn't know. 1-7 at home. That is horrible. Yeah, so much for that. So much for that. I did not know that. But, you know, you got some young teams that are coming up in the league. Let's talk about some of these teams real quick. With Tampa, you know, they're a really solid corner away from being a legitimate ridiculously good team. And that's going to be a tough division next year when you have New Orleans with Drew Brees. Josh Freeman is taking huge steps this year. I mean, he was a guy who I was a little skeptical about, You know, I figured he'd be one of those mid-round quarterbacks who just never really kind of pans out. But, man, he's been a find for them. And props to Raheem Morris for getting it turned around quick, because I was worried about his job stability out there.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because they're looking to get rid of him. Which, again, give somebody a chance to get it out. Yeah, I mean, their biggest thing is the experience. They got to continue to get more experience. But, yeah, they're on the right track. I see more of that in the NFC than I do in the AFC. You know?
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
You know, I see more of that in the NFC than I do in the AFC. I mean, the teams who didn't make the playoffs, you got major questions. It's not like they're on a trajectory. It's like you just said about Miami, 1-7 at home. There's something going on in Miami. Houston, we still haven't quite figured out why they haven't been able to get over the hump. You know, you got the Jaguars. I don't know what's going on down there. Tennessee, we don't know what's going on there. Raiders, we don't know what's going on there. San Diego is, you know, they didn't make the playoffs, but I think some things could be corrected because, you know, they'll settle the contract issue and hopefully they'll have a full team back. You know, they just got to start winning from the beginning and quit digging holes.
Right.
You know, for them, but.
But you almost have to think that that's just who they are.
Yeah, and you wonder why they came back with North Turner, but, you know, obviously you look at the labor situation, he's probably not a bad. I mean, because you're going to make a move on Norv, you got to ask to make a move on A.J. Smith, because, you know, he kind of put it all together and it hasn't quite worked out. And so, I mean, you start looking at those teams. I mean, Denver, you know, you got Elway, and the biggest thing they got is Elway coming in as the person for the player operations and doing all that. So it's more questions about the AFC people who didn't make it, like more negative. When you talk about the AFC, for the most part, there's some positive pieces there, you know. And, you know, the Rams are building to seem like the right way. Arizona's probably the biggest question. I mean, Arizona's like the team that's probably similar. And then NFC East teams, like Washington. Some of them fiascos happening over there. But, you know, the Giants, Carolina, I don't know where they're going. But you know, some of these other teams, you know, Dallas seem like they're right to ship a little bit. Minnesota seem like they're right to ship a little bit. So the AFC is going to be interesting going into next year. AFC, you know, you could almost sense some of these other teams continue to dominate. You know, Indianapolis is probably going to be better next year because they'll be healthier. So that's going to make it difficult on a team. Some of those teams who didn't make it because they had a window when Indianapolis was hurt, and they still made it. So it's going to be, you know, some of the pitcher, biggest thing, like you said, is Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay is a solid team. You know, I remind you, like, right when Dungy took them over early on and was trying to change the culture, I mean, it seemed like they're coming back on that same kind of run. Solid defense that they're putting together, and you know, like get a corner, but they got, you know, they got a quarterback that seems to be able to make plays down the stretch. You know, the running backs are coming into their own. They can run the football. They got a young receiver in Williams. You know, they got some pieces there that are, you know, Kellen Winslow. You know, you got some pieces there that you can build off of that look good. You know, their biggest issues they got there in the division with New Orleans and in Atlanta. You know, you never know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I think in the AFC what you have a bunch of teams who have been up-and-comers who have now either are ripe and ready to compete, or the expiration date has passed and their window is now closing. I think that's what you have with Houston and Jacksonville, teams that has, and Tennessee also, teams that were kind of on the upswing, but for whatever reason haven't been able to capitalize and harness that positive incline that they were on. They haven't been able to continue on it, and now you see them going in the other way. Same thing with Cincinnati. At one point, that looked like a team that was going to be in play for, you know, the next 10 years or so. And now they're on a they hit a quick decline. I mean, where, you know, you just don't know what to think about the franchise. The same thing with Denver. Even last year, they looked like, you know, that there was just more there than what they've shown. And I think the same thing with Seattle. San Diego. I think San Diego may have, you know, they may just be that team that's going to be 9-7 every year because they start off slow and it takes them a while to get going. And, you know, maybe next year Ryan Matthews can be healthy the entire year and they can really show everybody what they can be about. But every year everybody talks about how much talent they have on that roster. And every year that roster underachieves given the expectations. But it does seem like a lot of the younger talent in the league is located in the NFC. And again, the NFC, I think you have a couple of teams that are sleepers that just need to make a position change at quarterback, just need to make a change at quarterback, like Arizona. That's a roster that's ready to compete at a higher level. They just had such poor quarterback play this year that they really weren't able to do anything. But if you put a solid quarterback on that roster, that's a very good team and they're a year removed from being a good team in the NFC. And the same thing with Minnesota. You know, you put a solid quarterback in that situation, and that's a different franchise. That's a different team. And I think the same can be said for Washington. You put a decent quarterback back there behind center, and you have a roster that's in a better position to win some games. So you have some teams in the NFC who are, you know, one key piece, which is the quarterback, which is a hard piece to replace, but it's still just one piece nonetheless. They're like one piece away from having a competitive team. So, you know, the NFL is going to be real interesting to see how. I think I'm extremely excited for the playoffs. I hope the listeners out there are excited for the playoffs. It's going to be fun to watch the games this weekend. Everyone seems like it's going to be a nice, good old, clean fist fight. And that's the kind of football I like to watch.
That's right. Get that popcorn.
So we got about 2 minutes left of the show. You want to give your parting shots, your closing thoughts?
What I want to say to you, Jim Harbaugh, is from your boys in Ann Arbor, don't taste fool's gold. Don't taste fool's gold.
My parting shot. Go ahead.
I was gonna say shout out to Miami. They got Dwayne and we didn't talk about him, but Dwayne and LeBron, co players of the month.
Whatever. Get them dudes. Who are you talking about? I know who you're talking about. Oh, man. I want to give a shout-out to the Denver Nuggets. Y'all better trade Carmelo quick. Y'all running out of time. Y'all got about a month left. The clock's ticking. Call Jack Bauer. Make it happen.
That's a crazy one. We do have to talk about the NBA. I would say trade him to New York and get the, Gallerini, whatever. Gallinari. Get one of them young players coming back.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to be a doormat for a minute anyway if they move Melo. It is what it is. So, you know, we got about 90 seconds. We're going to let the music ride us out. But you've been on with the Real Sports Guys. We're Real Guys Talk Real Sports. Feel free to catch us here Tuesday nights, 10 to 12 p.m. Central Time. Feel free to give us a call. Feel free to join us. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter. You know, we are where you are, so feel free to get in touch with us. All right, have a blessed day, blessed night, and enjoy life. All right, man, we wrapped.
All right. Yeah, I'm pulling the ray. I got to try to get the names right. I'm hitting the wall. This workout's killing me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'm trying to I've been doing it for a few weeks, so I'm trying to keep it focused.
Okay.
So fitness.
Yeah, stick with it.
Yeah, I got to do it. But yeah, my boy just got a call. My boy's father died, he had a massive heart attack over the weekend. Richard McGregor, he's from Whitewater. He's from Beloit, but Marissa might know Dr. McGregor.
Okay.
She let her know that he passed away. She may know him because he was a principal in Merrill, and he's principal in Cunningham and principal around the city, been in the district for a long time.
Okay, I'll mention it to her.
Yeah. So, but yeah, man. Yeah, we're gonna have to. I thought my guy might. And I saw the email from Phil T. He said he had a guy who should come on about college football.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah. So we might have to just try to get him on. Yeah, we're gonna have some. This next 48 hours is going to say a lot.
My brother's
so bad. He said if they don't get hired by him, out of state. This is a cat who grew up wild state. He said, he told everybody, he said, if a Harbaugh don't come, he said, something that AB did. And you know, he'll call Harbaugh.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to connect with him at some point. No, he'll hit Jim or John, I think the wound when he didn't get the job before, and the way that some of the players came out, Carr and some of these players who played on that team, talking about you're not a Michigan man because he made that comment about what was happening with black athletes. You know, I think that went a little bit deeper than we know. And yeah, so it's going to be how they come out of this is going to be, we'll say a lot, about where this is going. But we're going to learn a lot in the next 48 hours of all these teams because the domino's going to fall.
Yeah. When they go, they're going to go quickly.
So you might have to put a couple of, I got to start working on that, putting a couple of polls up on the site. Let's think about some, start getting some reaction that way. Try to start getting some stuff up on the Facebook on that. But, this is going to be, these dominoes going to fall pretty quick here in the next 14 hours. We're going to learn a lot about what happened behind the scenes. That's what I want to know. Get behind the scenes. What happened?
Yeah.
Something ain't going right.
You're absolutely right. It's something up.
Yeah. If they come back tomorrow and say Rodriguez is staying, that would be. I wouldn't put it past it, man. For some reason, I don't know why.
Man, if they did that, that would just show the impotency of the regime. I think that would definitely be a bad move. I wouldn't be surprised, but it would be a bad move, and I think it would just be one of those things that you guys say, this is not going to end well. I think if Rodriguez comes back, I think that's the determination that you have to make, is that this ain't going to end well.
It's unless you – there's a defensive coordinator that you've identified and that he's going to be able to come in and run his own stuff, and you got somebody who can recruit defense. But I just don't – why would you wait unless you're trying to soften the transition, let Rodriguez get some momentum so he can move the pit, plus a smooth transition for everybody? That might be fine. Mm-hmm. Why would you wait night and meet again tomorrow?
Mm-hmm.
Unless he says something compelling in the meeting.
Right.
That they take pause because they know they're not getting Harbaugh, and they're thinking, well, we got Denier, we got all his offensive talent, we just don't have the defense. And does it make sense to change course now if we can guarantee we got a defensive support? Unless they got somebody who they know can come in as a big-time defensive guy. Something's got to change. But Robinson, you thought, was a big-time defensive guy. Unless you don't let Robinson run what he want to run. Run a 3-4, run a 4-3. But something doesn't make a lot of sense, because it don't make a lot of sense to delay it if it's supposed to be inevitable. Why would you
stop? Right.
Unless you're trying to set a, you know, set up, you know, less cause, you know, conversations with less miles and everything, and moving through night, you're trying to make sure the contract is set. You know, it just, a lot of it doesn't make any sense. You know, unless you're trying to make it smooth all around, it doesn't make a lot of sense. Because I could see Rodriguez ended up at Pitt, you know, back in the Big East, you know, doing what he do, you know. But it doesn't make a lot of sense. So, when you start looking at the only stable programs right now in the Big Ten that you can really feel good that are competing at a high level right now might be Wisconsin and Ohio State.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa's there every couple of years. You know, you got people that show up to the party every so often.
But
as far as consistency goes, you know, that's basically it.
Basically Wisconsin and Ohio State. Every year, that's kind of like there every year putting something together. So this is going to be, these next 24 to 48 hours are going to say a lot about where the, where the leaders and the legends going to go.
Right.
They advertise.
Legends. Oh, man.
Well, man, I'm going to let you go. I got a lot
All right, man.
Yeah, we definitely, I got to make sure I connect with you because I'm getting through a couple of these days. But I don't know what your schedule is like. Is you back at school right now?
Yeah, we're back at school.
Okay, well. We'll have to talk in a minute.
No, but yeah, let me know what's going on with you, and we can figure something out.
All right, man. Well, take it easy.
All right, man. Peace.